Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Monday, January 22nd, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy Monday, Melody.
Happy Monday to you, too. And, oh, all kinds of things. You know, there's a lot going on, but yet it's kind of like a little bit of a slow news day. Of course, the government and the closure and the opening and everything else is the big discussions. But there's a lot. There's some other things I want to talk about today, and oil is about one. But we'll get to that here in just a little bit. Let me go ahead and begin with the gold prices today. We have gold. Tough day for gold. Pressure all day long. But it managed to be up $2.40. $2.40 at $1,334. Silver was down 2 pennies today at $17.08. Platinum down $16 at $999. And palladium was down 6 at $1,100. The USDX today was down 0.27 at 90.39, but crude oil was up 12 cents today at 63.66. And the paper markets, everyone said that, the paper markets rebounded strongly after government got their act together. But it wasn't down that much to begin with. And really, the big move really came in the last hour, as it usually does. So it didn't move mostly, but ended up 142 points on the Dow at 26,214. The NASDAQ was up 71 at 7408. The S&P was up 22 points at 2,832. The 10-year yield up 0.03 at 2.66%. I believe we're going to be talking about yields here in a little bit also. The euro was 123, down only 0.01. Not a lot of change in the European markets. And Bitcoin was down another 7% today. And something I wanted to bring up as I was going through those numbers in today's newsletter. I came across a cartoon. We talked about it last week on my earlier show at 10 o'clock Eastern Time on WWCR Shortwave 7490. And it was a big ship, you know, like the Titanic. And, you know, usually when a ship goes underwater, you have that front end that goes straight up in the air. And that part that was shooting straight up in the air was the U.S. economy. So it was showing that the U.S. economy will go straight up. The stock markets will go straight up right before it sinks. And it was a very good cartoon. And we did a whole show on it almost. But so make sure you can go to dgscoins.com. And not just for the cartoon, the political cartoon, but for the rest of the newsletter, and sign up at dgscoins.com.
Melody, it's reassuring to know that Newton's law still lives.
Yes. Yes, really. Oh, let's see. I found this interesting before we get into the government talk, because it was only less than a year ago that the Saudis bought the largest U.S. refinery in Texas. And with prices rising, Dave, the largest oil refinery, you can tell it's Monday today, along the U.S. East Coast, they filed for bankruptcy protection yesterday, blaming its downfall on broken environmental rules. The Philadelphia Energy Solutions said it went bankrupt because of skyrocketing costs to comply with the EPA's renewable fuel standard. The rule aimed at lowering pollution requires refiners to either blend oil with renewable fuels or buy credits. The company has received a $260 million lifeline from lenders and investors. One of those existing shareholders, Carlyle Group, they agreed to inject about $65 million into the company. And I think if listeners remember, Bob Chapman often brought up the Carlyle Group as being one of the elitist groups, that they were part of some of our many problems. So it's going to keep the refinery's operation and its 1,100 employees paid, I don't know how long, but for a while anyway. Philadelphia Energy Solutions plays a vital role in how Americans get their fuel. The company's Point Breeze and Girard Point refineries in Philadelphia turn up to 335,000 barrels of crude oil into gasoline and other fuels. So it is the East Coast's largest refiner. But some of these independent refineries, the company's been hurt by these shrinking margins and regulations, and said that the bankruptcy was caused by the continuing pressure on refining margins and soaring costs. The CEO said the company will continue to work with the government to address the broken RFS system that it is harming smaller independent merchant refiners. It said that last year it spent about $218 million to meet the renewable fuel standard, twice what it spent on payroll. My question is, and my thought is, or is it the competition with someone like the Saudis coming from Houston? That's not going to go anywhere. I was just thinking out loud, but
that's intriguing, nevertheless.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, do you have anything to add to that, Dave?
To the refinery,
the renewable fuel program
issue. No, not in particular. I think it's something that could be worthy of a separate conversation on a future financial survivor. Financial survival show. You know, we do know that President George W. Bush signed the renewable fuel program into law in 2005. That is a way to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and reduce our reliance on foreign oil. We also know that former advisor to President Trump, Carl Icahn, the very controversial investor. He's repeatedly blasted those EPA rules. He called them at the end of 2016 natural stupidity. Now, interestingly, Mr. Icahn, who's not a fan of a lot of people, but has had some luck over the years with his oil investments, apparently the FBI is investigating Icahn, Melody, to see whether he violated federal anti-corruption laws by personally benefiting from his efforts to change those EPA rules. So that's just an interesting twist on that issue.
Follow the money.
Follow the money.
Follow the corruption. Follow the money, follow the corruption. And now we can follow the natural stupidity as we're going to talk about the federal government shutdown.
Oh.
How'd you like that segue there, Dave?
I like that. Very good.
Anyway, it's going to be short-lived after all. We had the Senate today. They voted 81-19 to send a short-term funding bill to the House. And the bill would fund the government for another whole 3 weeks in February. And they got...
I mean, oh, excuse me.
Oh.
I felt left out there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So 3 weeks into early February, when the country will likely be subject to more petty politicking. They can name call, and they can continue with their child's play before settling on what we can hope will be a longer-term funding solution that gets through the end of fiscal year on September 30th. So do you want to give us an update on the latest to the government reopening, Dave?
Well, for those of you who have been at work or otherwise preoccupied with the day, senators did reach an agreement earlier in the afternoon to end the government shutdown. Congressional Democrats who voted down a spending bill that would have kept the government open on Friday because it didn't include a replacement for the expiring Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, DACA. They appear to be right back where they started with that one. But Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer did say at the beginning of his Senate floor speech, the Trump shutdown will soon end. but the work must go on, and it will. So the Senate vote, Melody, was actually a procedural vote to proceed to the final vote on the continuing resolution that'll keep the government running until February or through February 8th. It'll fully fund the Children's Health Insurance Program for 6 years, a significant thing for that program, which had run out of funding last September. And it will delay several taxes, including the medical device tax under the Affordable Care Act. So the Senate will take that final vote later today, and then it'll go on to the House, which has to approve it before it can be sent to the president's desk to be signed and formally ending the government shutdown. That could happen as early as this evening, although there is some apparent disagreement among some of the Republicans in the House that might take until tomorrow to work out. Otherwise, it's going to require probably some substantial numbers of Democrats to approve it, which they'll likely get in any event anyway. Now, Schumer said he and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell have struck a deal to advance the DACA legislation that affects about 700,000 to 800,000 unauthorized immigrants who, as we know, came to the U.S. as children, with many of them with their parents or other relatives. So we'll see what happens there. The agreement hasn't been worked out per se with the House leadership, much less the grassroots Republicans in the House. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. House Republicans did get a promise last week from Speaker Paul Ryan that a vote on a more conservative immigration bill that's being sponsored by Representative Bob Goodlatte would be held in the near future. So whether the DACA or Dreamer bill or provisions will be part of that, it's going to be we won't know that really until February 8th or after.
Well, what's amazing is they've had, what, 6 months or more to work on this? And then, and now they still have to go to February 8th? I mean, it's, you know.
And
it's,
you,
it's
you mentioned
pathetic.
The petty politics and the child's play, Melody, and this is all part of that. I mean, both sides have done it. They continue to do it. They wait to the last minute precisely to leverage what each of respective party thinks it has over the others to get a last minute maneuver
deal.
A deal that results in a deal. So it's mind boggling. It's disturbing. It's frustrating. Who knows where this all ends, but it's not over.
I actually saw one senator that had the same idea that you had about they can't come to agreements that by a particular time in September when they need to, they don't get paid.
Oh. Well, good.
Only he was referencing this about, if they can't come up with an agreement to fund the government today, that they should not get paid.
Yeah.
So you were not alone out there in those thoughts, although you meant it. The senator or congressman probably didn't. But
yeah, I suspect a little more self-serving to some constituents who, you know, are they've probably been thinking the same thing for the last however many years.
But you know what, too, is I believe the people who are beginning to figure this out, I don't know if they're as disturbed about this or, you know, see this as all just theatrics, just all planned to get what they want and so forth. Because normally, if the government was going to shut down, you'd see more of an impact on the stock markets. you would see more of an impact on gold and silver. You'd see more of an impact on our currency. And we really haven't seen barely a blip in any of those, really.
Yeah, you're right. History shows that a government shutdown does result in at least some short-term correction in the stock market. The volatility index usually rises. There's a sudden flight to gold, as a safe asset. But for one thing, it looks like this shutdown is just going to be, affect one, maybe two work days this year. So, as you said, I don't think we'll see that kind of effect. I mean, interestingly, previous shutdowns, I think 2013 was given an example. The S&P averaged a return of 2.1% a month after a shutdown and traded positive 80% of the time, while the volatility index averaged a return of about 0.9% 1 month after a shutdown. Nicholas Kolos, who's a co-founder of DataTrek Research, said, I thought interestingly, and that I'm quoting him here, is anyone with capital markets experience knows that U.S. government shutdowns are largely meaningless in the context of financial asset values. Getting sucked into a series of seemingly ominous headlines that smarter players already understand is a typical rookie trading mistake. So, although we believe there are numerous strong reasons for investors to be buying more gold and silver now, and we'll talk about a few of them later on in the show, don't use the shutdown as necessarily a good reason, particularly if the house doesn't concur. Although, pay close attention. I mean, pure market timers may find some fascination in the potential for gold and silver price increases if a shutdown goes on a little bit longer, but buyer beware.
I think what you see to me that these government shutdowns mean is number one, that we have some real problems. I mean, that's what it should show us, and that's what it should tear, that's what people should learn from it, and people should be very concerned about it. And I mean, because to me, this is, I mean, number one, the whole thing was about the our break coming up. So we're going to have to go.
It's Monday. Our timing is off.
It was all about our program and this break that we're heading into, folks. So stay tuned and we'll be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And we were, prior to the break, going into the break, we were talking about, you know, the government shutdown and how you react. But Dave, you know what? I'll tell you what. In 2013, coming right out of the Great Recession of 2008, it was a big deal. And I think some of the other government shutdowns, but it also, as we were talking during the break, it actually exposes the charade that is going on in our government. And it, people should be very concerned. And this should be just another reason why people should get out of paper and put it into something tangible, gold and silver, of course. And look how many people, their portfolios are probably showing some nice gains, although I hear otherwise too. But those that are making nice gains, do you think any of them are pulling out any of their gains and putting it into gold and silver? No, they're going to ride it. And the next thing you know, we're going to have a little bit of a fallback and or a pullback. And, you know, higher highs right before you sink. As the cartoon and the newsletter will show, the IMF came out today, Dave, and said that they think that the recently enacted tax cut plan will result in some additional economic growth. But the key here is it's only going to be for a short time.
Yeah, that's right. On the eve of the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, Melody, the IMF has revised its global growth forecast for this year and next. Upwards, saying the revision is due in part to the changes to the U.S. tax system enacted recently by the Congress and signed by the President. They've both been, their 2018 and 19 forecasts for growth have been revised upward by 0.2 percentage point to 3.9%. And they say explicitly that that revision reflects increased global growth momentum and the expected impact of the recently approved U.S. tax policy changes. That's the changes that in part result in the corporate tax rate dropping from 35% to 21% that supporters hope will boost consumer spending and U.S. growth. And that critics, although critics believe it'll add $1.5 trillion plus to the U.S. deficit and debt. So that's interesting. I mean, it added that the effect on U.S. growth is estimated to be positive through 2020, culminating to an additional 1.2% through that year. Although those obviously they subject those forecast with just a number of uncertainties and questions. But it says because of the temporary nature of some of the tax plans provisions, the tax policy package they project will lower growth for a few years from 2022 onwards. And that's similar to some of the technical studies that Melody and I have shared with listeners over the past couple of months. So we'll see what happens. Obviously, we're concerned directly with its impact on the U.S. economy, although we can't turn a blind eye, if you will, to changes in Europe and Asia and elsewhere as well. Melody?
And, you know, it always amazes me, though, that they come out with these predictions for future growth. And it's like, I think we're going to see so many changes in the next year or two. They're going to be revising their estimates probably on a monthly basis. Because
that's volatility.
because I think we're going to have a lot of it. Because I think a lot of our economies, I think we're going to talk about yields today, bonds today, or maybe tomorrow or Wednesday. We have all of these huge economies that it's all based on stimulus by the central banks. And once they begin cutting back, I don't believe the economies are near strong enough in order to support their lack of funding from these central banks. And I think you're going to be seeing this in the various areas of finance, or whether it be the yields on just not our own, but around the world. And again, all these estimates coming out from the IMF and, the tax cuts. We just don't know when they talk about the short-term impact on the tax cuts. They didn't define short-term.
Yeah.
Is it 6 months, 2 months, a year? I mean, well, Reagan was a year and a half, I believe.
Yeah, I think they're saying small increases in 18 and 19, slightly larger increases into 2000, into 2020. And then all bets are off.
I don't even think we'll make it to 2020. I really don't. But we'll see. And, of course, that's the whole point of being prepared today. Because once you're prepared today, once you've converted, that's a new word, Dave.
Converting. Remember this, listeners. Converting is converting after you confer with us. Is that right?
I know
that's what you meant.
That is exactly what I meant. And so 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. So make sure you begin to confer with us. I'm not a fan of Bitcoin. I'm not a fan of cryptocurrencies. I think they're a fad. I think they're a gimmick. I think they're a Ponzi scheme, and it's new money that, in fact, I don't know if you have it in there, but there was investors are struggling to withdraw cash from money exchanges as they look to safe gold investments amid fears of cryptocurrency collapse.
Yep.
And so Bitcoin tumbled again early this morning. Had a low of 10,376 before finishing up the day as of the 3 o'clock Eastern time. Ethereum dropped 5%. Ripple, the third largest digital currency, I thought that was wine, fell 10%.
I know.
Oh, that's confusing. Fell 10% to a low of 1.24. So the important news for gold and silver investors, because as we've been saying for several weeks now, we strongly believe that these cryptocurrencies would continue to fall, and they're going to push these precious metal prices higher. So, Dave?
What?
What?
We'll have to have a new segment one of these weeks that contains the word grumpy.
Who's that?
Me?
Are you grumpy?
No, I'm grumpy. Cryptocurrency makes me grumpy.
Yes.
Just because of the wildly speculation that's involved. And I just have friends who, younger friends primarily, don't have a lot of money. They're looking at this fad, as you call it, rightly, I believe, at something similar to the .com boom 20 years ago, and seeing this is perhaps a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for them to really make it big. And I think, it's certainly a type of investment that, even the well-informed People who follow this all the time, people who work in the investment industry, know very little about, from the mining aspect and, you know, how to get in, how to get out. And I just think, you know, just a lot of people are being taken advantage of.
I think so, too. And I want to continue this conversation. I don't mean to interrupt, but we do have a caller. We have Ivan calling us this afternoon. Good afternoon, Ivan. I think he's...
Hope you are doing well.
Yes.
Hi, Ivan.
How are you doing? I have... I know, I think you brought up that there are other things happening in the world, and they are, which are not really even mentioned with MSM or any of the news casts, such as the daily shooting across the LOC between Pakistan and India. There were some, I read some articles on internet that there is some build-up of Chinese troops which is in a disputed area between China and India. Of course, the Turkish invasion of the Kurdish areas in Syria, which started a couple of days ago and is a major attack on Syria. Well, I understand that they did get a blessing from Russia. Lavrov was informed about this, and the indication is that the Kurds are going to try to wipe out the YPG and PPG, I think, is the other component of the Kurdish units, which are being armed and so on by U.S. and Britain. So there are a lot of activities, of course, and of the thing in Israel where they Al-Quds was taken, you know, in essence, away from the Palestinians, and the U.S. is planning to have the embassy there by, according to Vice President Pence, by end of next year, will be moved to the Al-Quds area. So there is major things happening which we are not really not focusing on as a country, or maybe the higher ups are, but the people are not. And so my question to you, Dave or Melody, is what is the, you know, what is your reaction to these activities which are happening in the Middle East and then in Indian and Pakistani area across the line of control?
Well, I'll go first, then Dave, then you can go. But you know what? You're correct. There's all kinds of things that are being heated up everywhere. You know, the Turkey's war with Syria and Kurds, that's beginning in earnest. And the U.S. is urging Turkey. And I don't know how this all plays out, because Turkey, I believe, is a NATO member. So U.S. is urging Turkey to exercise restraint in Syria's invasion. Yet the U.S. is in there trying to begin nation building in various parts of Syria. So I don't know how all that's going to work out. How does all that work out? It's something, you know, it's kind of like just something waiting to happen, the accident waiting to happen. I mean, you've had foreigners who targeted there was a Taliban attack in a Kabul hotel. I mean, you've got things everywhere. Venezuela is coming apart at its seams. And I saw today earlier that I think it was the European Union. I don't think it was Britain. I don't think it was it was either the UK or the European Union put more sanctions on various Venezuelan politicians and so forth. And, I mean, it's, you know, they're just putting so much pressure on that country. The people are suffering for it. And all they want is their vast reserve oil fields. I mean, they've got some of the largest oil reserves in the world. You can't tell me that's not what they want. And it used to be those oil reserves that, you know, paid the people. You can say socialism is wrong and so forth, but yet, you know, until the price really dropped down to that $25 level, I mean, they were dealing with what they, you know, voted as far as their government and so forth. And so that's beginning to unwind, and we don't know if that's going to spill over to other countries. And so, yeah, you're right, Ivan. It is a mess. And these things are, well, I don't think we've heard the last from Israel and the having the capital in Jerusalem. We haven't heard the last of that yet for something nasty to appear out of that. Dave, what do you think?
Well, a lot of alarming gamesmanship going on here, and listeners shouldn't think that any of these moves by any of the country, any of these countries, are being done in a vacuum and without some sort of end in mind. I view them as it's like a combination of chess, dominoes, and I guess the game of life, all rolled into one, but toward different ends. Depending on which country we're talking about, and a lot of them, as Melody suggested, many of these motives are at the root of these motives are self-economic interests. I think about South Korea, is sort of a different bear, but getting back to Bitcoin for a minute, there have been on again, off again rumors about a crypto crackdown in South Korea. Their finance minister last week said in deciding how the government wants to regulate crypto, the shutdown of virtual currency exchange is still one of their options. And South Korea accounts for 20% of all crypto trading. Thus, that coin took a nosedive over close to 20% in one day. China, talking about a crackdown on cryptocurrency mining. That country accounts for 79%. Of global crypto mining. They're not direct effects, but I think I just say them as an example of the types of a longer term economic strategy that I think is driving some of these actions and reactions.
Yeah, but a lot of these games shouldn't be played. I mean, we have no business doing some of these things, and that's the problem. I mean, why do we go in and try to steal? And you're right. Who's behind? You've got the, oh, we're heading into a break. We still have Ivan on the phone. We'll get back to him when we come back. So, folks, please stay tuned. I need to hear it just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And we had caller Ivan, and I just wanted to ask Ivan, is there anything else that you'd like to say?
Well, I just wanted to point out that, I mean, we have a lot of stuff going on here, like you were talking earlier in the show, and but there are other issues which could be detrimental to many countries, including U.S. and of course, Europe and so on, which can cause, either a local or a third world war, if they are let go unchecked, and that's what I just want to bring up to the attention of the listeners. So
we appreciate that, Ivan. I mean, it's so important to. We appreciate your raising, particularly news that isn't always available. Or that's made available to the vast majority of the public, because they are so important and critical to what else is going on in the world and how eventually we believe they're going to impact gold and silver. So thanks.
Definitely. Oh, you're welcome.
Alrighty.
Nice talking to you.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You, Ivan. Bye-bye.
Bye, Ivan.
All righty, so take it away, Dave.
Oh, well, we're just going to talk about a new study by the charity Oxfam that says that just 42 people own the same amount of wealth as the poorest 50% worldwide, and about 82% of new wealth generated in 2017 went to the richest 1% of the global population. While the poorest 50% across the world saw no increase in wealth at all. Melody, it looks like income equality continues to widen, or that gap, and that the rich keep getting richer at the expense of everyone else. The Oxfam report does come as world leaders and business elites are convening this week in Davos to promote responsive and responsible leadership.
Yeah, okay.
Perhaps that'll wear off.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Oxfam study shows that the pocketbooks of the Earth's billionaires fattened to the tune of $762 billion last year, a figure that would, interestingly, end extreme worldwide poverty seven times over. Not to drop, names or anything. Oxford said its figures, which some of observers we note have criticized for their methodologies, showed economic rewards were increasingly concentrated at the top. The charity cited tax evasion, the erosion of workers' rights, cost-cutting, and business influence on policy decisions as the reason for the widening inequality gap. That's not just in the U.S. That's worldwide. So I don't want anyone to think that this is strictly criticism being leveled at ourselves. We also found that the charity also found that the wealth of billionaires had increased by 13% a year on average from 2006 to 2015, and that 9 out of 10 of the world's 2,000 plus billionaires were men. That's certainly not surprising to me. Is it you, Melody?
No.
Mark Goldring, who's chief executive of Oxfam, said that these statistics show that something is very wrong with the global economy. The concentration of extreme wealth at the top is not a sign of a thriving economy, but a symptom of a system, or systems, we'd add, that are failing the millions of hardworking people or those on poverty wages who make our clothes and grow our food. And we know, Melody, that growing income inequality tends to increase geopolitical volatility. And we know that rising volatility usually, what rising volatility usually does to gold and silver.
Well, you know, Dave, you know, this Mark Goldring, he's really correct. What it is, you know, we see this extreme wealth at the top, and it is a danger sign. It's not healthy economies. And it is from a system that is most likely being, not most likely, but is being funneled through the central banks, you know, basically to the wealthy, so they continue to increase their wealth and their power. And to me, I see the danger is, yeah, you don't have strong economies. You have not healthy economies. You see this tendency to be pushing towards this universal basic income, and it's not good, because not only do you have this wealth at the top, but they also influence your governments, influence countries, and it's so very dangerous. And you know, people argue with me. I do believe in having an estate tax, and people, no, it's people don't see the danger. People don't see that, you know, just because the wealthier are getting wealthier, they don't see that it's not a sign of a thriving economy, but a system that's failing. A system that is failing. So,
yeah, I know. It's an interesting topic, and just one of a number of issues that we've got to pay attention, close attention to.
Well, you know, Dave, I see the 10-year treasuries have risen about 20 basis points already in 2018. We had a low of 2.44% on January 3rd to 2.62% a couple of hours ago. And when I saw it, it was actually 2.66 I saw.
2.66, you hit it on the head, Melody. I mean, this upward trend is even more noticeable if you go back to September, when rates hit a low of 2.05%. And as the 10-year yield continues on its trek to 3%, all gold and silver investors should pay close attention to precious metal prices. That seems to be our theme today, paying close attention. Stay in touch, you know. And that is this week's Brevity is Golden Thought, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Melody?
Dave, we all remember what happened to gold and silver market 10 years ago after the Great Recession, when the paper markets nearly collapsed. You know, finances of literally millions of American families and small businesses, they almost all came apart at the seams. And then you have the bailouts from the government and Federal Reserve, bailed out the negligent and fat cat banks that were considered too big to fail. Gold and silver went on a 2.5-year ride, and we saw gold skyrocketed 265% from $712 an ounce to almost $1,900.
Mm-hmm.
Silver shot up more than twice in that amount. It was a whopping 540%. It went from $9 to shy of 50. So just to compare, the S&P 500 index dropped 50% in that same time frame. So, you know, folks, you know, I think we're on the cusp of another major paper market correction for a number of economic and political reasons that we've been talking about. That's what this program is all about. We strongly believe that this downturn is going to result in another major, if not unprecedented, boon to gold and silver. And Dave, it looks like Congress is on the verge of eliminating some key protections and legislation it passed back in July of 2010. I know I'm not a fan of regulations to control markets, but the protections that I'm referring to are now in the Dodd-Frank And that was enacted supposedly to make sure we never face another financial collapse and bank bailout like the ones we faced in 2008. So tell the listeners what you think is going on here.
Well, Melody, Axios did report today that excuse me one second. What is going on? We've got a live radio snafu. Bear with us, listeners, for just one second.
Well, I can just take over, Dave. That's no problem.
Go ahead, if you want mine, please.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, Axios reported earlier today that it obtained and published a draft copy of the White House infrastructure plan. And I saw it, and I sent it over to you because I didn't have time to read it. But I thought, this is interesting. The leaked plan will be posted on our Facebook and Twitter pages after today's show. So you can go there. Yes, we have the Twitter up. It's DGScoins. Is that correct?
At DGScoins. At the at sign DGScoins.
Okay. See how new I am to this, listeners? I mean, there aren't too many huge surprises in there, but there are a couple of notable omissions, like the lack of a gas tax increase and what seems to be a smaller ask from the private sector. And I don't know, can you take us through that? The basics of the plan, or is this something that we should just bring this to the listeners on Wednesday? And
I'm okay now. I can do that if you'd like.
Sure, go ahead.
Listeners, with the caveat that Melody said the infrastructure plan was leaked and so therefore should be considered as preliminary. But with that cautionary note, here are a couple of observations that D.C. political experts say are important to keep in mind about this. First, the plan does not call for an increase in the gasoline, the federal gas tax that was apparently been bandied about as a primary way of paying for the federal government's component of the infrastructure plan. Now, the gas tax hasn't been raised in 25 years, and the White House did previously signal a willingness to use such a bump to help pay for infrastructure spending, but the draft includes no mention of it, and possibly just a negotiating tactic. Now, next, the plan also contains less leverage. White House officials have previously talked about a possible what's called a 5-to-1 leverage when it comes to infrastructure spending, or $200 billion in federal outlays as part of a $1 trillion program. But the draft plan appears to fall short of that, at least at the outset. There is such a leverage ratio put in place for half of the federal funds, but not necessarily for the remainder. Some of the other monies are just loans to be repaid at cost. Axios' Dan Primark ponders that others possibly could hit the leverage figure via repayment out of revenue shares, but that's a future possibility rather than something that's being talked about at the outset. Now, in what's being called the plan's pro rondo piece, the plan would encourage increased use of private activity bonds, including by eliminating alternative minimum taxes on such securities. The elimination of the private activity bonds not only wasn't included in the recent federal tax bill as it was originally conceived, but it actually moves in an opposite direction from early House GOP language on private activity bonds. Next, there's no municipal broadband. Melody, the plan does reference rural broadband as part of a larger infrastructure program. But municipal broadband is not explicitly mentioned. It could fall under a transformative projects program whose covered sections include telecom, but we don't know at this point. And finally, the draft refers repeatedly to the total appropriation, but it doesn't say if the requested amount will be $200 billion or some other figure. This now apparently part of an overall $1 trillion infrastructure project. Not sure what all this means, Melody, since it is a draft, but it is a fascinating first look at one of the president's signature campaign promises that I'm sure will have its share of proponents and critics. Supporters, for example, are surely going to like the shared pain aspect of the plan, with the Fed's money being supplemented by matching funds probably from state and local governments and the private sector, while opponents are likely include state and local governments who will say, well, I can't afford this. I can't afford the large contributions envisioned by the plan. Interesting stuff, Melody. We'll see, won't we?
We sure will, and that's my biggest question. How is everything going to be paid for? I get that, you know, the government's going to do $200 billion, but, you know, if they say $200 billion, you know it's going to be $5, $8, or $1 trillion on their own. They can never get their estimates correct, and, of course, a lot of that is inflation. And so if this country is booming as we're supposed to be booming, we're going to have a lot of inflation, and, of course, we're going to have much higher gold and silver prices. 1-800-375-4188. Folks, our problems aren't going away. They're just being increased. And with the increase that we're seeing in our problems, we're getting this phony economy that I believe can reverse in just as quick as it did in 2008. 1-800-375-4188. Butch Paul will be joining us tomorrow. Dave, you will be here on Wednesday, and I look forward to that. Listeners, 1-800-375-4188. We'll be back. Thank you for joining us, and be safe and God bless.
Bye-bye.